each other would.
And I have come to steal ye. Hear me stick a fly in through the trees. Clickety-clackety, clickety-clackety.
Welcome to a preview of Now Playing's bonus podcast review of The Witch.
'Twas I what stole him. I be the witch of the wood. I am that very witch. When I sleep, my spirit slips away from my body and dances naked with the devil.
Hosted by Stuart.
Must you continue to dishonor the laws of the Commonwealth and the Church with your prideful conceit?
Jacob.
Black Philip Sif, you are wicked.
And Arnie.
We are children of sin all.
If you'd like to hear this whole episode, help support our show by backing the Now Playing Podcast Podbean crowdfunding campaign. You can find details at nowplayingpatron.com.
You have no gun, William. No, not even a dog.
There is none will help this family.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
Speak none of this to Mother. None.
Listener discretion is advised.
The moon is bright, the rain bothers me not. We're back in a 2-day if any man will return with me.
Yeah, throughout the film, we'll see Caleb and Thomason. They're talking about, you remember that luxurious thing we had in England called glass? And talking about apples and butter, like things today, like those aren't luxuries, but there is this stark difference with how they're living versus how life was in England that Caleb could barely even remember at this point.
Yeah, I did find that interesting. And again, the first time I watched it, I didn't even understand they were talking about glass, but I did get that they had come straight from England, and I read that the director was really big on hiring actual English actors, which is why I only know the two parents, because they're both in Game of Thrones.
I haven't watched that, but Ralph Ineson, every time he shows up in something, I recognize him. I think mostly because he has such a distinct voice.
Yeah. Wasn't he the guy that thought the Guardians of the Galaxy were a bunch of a-holes?
He was in Guardians. He was in The Last Jedi. He's popped up in some popular films.
I looked at his resume and I went, yep, I've seen him in that, don't remember. But I remember him from Game of Thrones, and I'll remember him in this. He has a real distinctive look. Here he kind of looks Games of Thrones-y, you know, because that's of a medieval period and they're just withered and bearded and all of that.
And I just want to say, I mean, I think hopefully no disagreement on how this movie presents the time period. It is so fastidious in detail that it really does just conjure a world that felt lost to me. Like, it's just impressive to be able to see modern technology of cameras be able to capture something that looks and sounds like this.
Yeah, they used a lot of natural daylight during the daytime. It was an all-shot natural daylight, but they had to shoot it with what they had. And Eggers was real big, again, having this being period accurate. Now, not everything is. He'll call it. He's like, that breed of dog and that breed of goat, that they wouldn't have had those specific breeds. But like this house they build, he's like, no, we built that the way they would have built a house back then in the 17th century. And because you can't do that with modern tools, we actually had to use period-specific tools to make some of this house and some of the sets.
Yeah, it's like method directing and method art directing. It's really impressive that way. And, you know, if I were teaching a film techniques class, this is the film I would hold up to talk about composition. It is its own language in this film. There are so many times where, yeah, you don't understand the dialogue, you don't know what they're talking about, but you have all the information you need to because of the way it's shot. Because characters in some points are just swallowed by this forest here, that you just get the sense that they are in over their head when they pull out of town and head towards their new land.
Yeah, I'll agree with that completely. Between the words that I was able to understand and the visual language of the film, I understood basically everything that was going on. But in addition, the film is gorgeous. I'm going to give it that. Is certain shots, there's one late in the film where you just see blood running into hay and it lingers on that shot. Or the way it uses darkness and light, and it teases me a lot. Like, it intentionally goes pitch black and I'm like trying to see things it doesn't want me to see. The film isn't very dynamic in regards to setting. beyond, I mean, they created a very period specific hovel where they live, but they don't go a lot of places. They go into the woods and they come back. But the way he uses light, the way he frames his shots, it's a really well shot film that I think could almost be watched sound off and enjoyed as a silent movie.
Yeah, just the way the camera lingers. This isn't a long film, and I don't think the story is that complex. And you spend a lot of time letting that camera linger. Like that shot of the woods is so foreboding because that camera will just sit on those woods that are across a field. And you're like, oh, something bad is going on in there.
Yeah, you get the sense that the antagonist is the American Wild. It is this untamed forest and land that they have to make work for them, and they're struggling very early on. I never knew from like those Thanksgiving decorations that stacking the corn that way was a real thing, but they don't have a lot of stacks and they're not going to make it through winter. And you just get the sense that yes, this man has led his family into death out of pride because he couldn't hack it and hang with those other maybe not as devout Puritans. They're now really going to suffer.
Arnie, you're saying you wanted a little bit more backstory. Originally, this film started with the peekaboo scene. And he's like, we should give a little bit more about who this family is and why they're out there. But I think it's just enough. It tells me just enough where I get the idea, okay, this family is more religious than the rest of the town, and they're moving out, and now they're struggling.
You see, I couldn't tell if they were more religious or less religious. I couldn't imagine them being less religious than anyone, but I also don't live in the 17th century.
They call the judges false Christians. I think they're saying they're more religious.
But I also couldn't tell if it was a difference of religion. Are these cultists, was my question.
And again, at this time, you would be very suspicious of any government asserting authority, because there's only one authority, right? You know, G-O-D is my only boss. You're not the boss of me. It's got to have come out of that. It's really where the tension is. This is a man that just doesn't trust other people. He wants it to come from the land. And he feels that if, yeah, they pray and they work hard, that God will deliver. So what does it mean when it doesn't? What does it mean when he takes?
You mentioned just starting with the peekaboo scene, Jacob. I think I would actually question less, because people living like Little House on the Prairie before the others showed up, I wouldn't question that at all. But then it's specifically seeing them banished that raises questions that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Oh, see, and what's interesting to me is just all the subtext going on. What does it mean when a more religious family leaves society to be more fundamentalist, and then all these horrible things are going to happen to them? Like, what is that saying? That you shouldn't be extremist? That they're being punished for their hypocrisy? To me, that just opens up a lot of possibilities with what to take from this film.
Yeah, these characters are either being tested by their God, punished by their God, are just torturing each other for ideals they can't live up to. But one way or another, this is going to be very brutal for them, starting with baby Samuel. It should be said, this is a family of mother, father, eldest son Caleb, eldest daughter Thomason, two creepy twins from The Shining, Mercy and Jonas. And then the only one that you really do feel like is innocent, like of all of them, the one that is without sin has to be this little baby.
No, he's got sin. He wasn't baptized.
That's the interesting thing, is that to the father, yeah, that child died in sin.
I think this movie, you said you don't want to go see The Nun and end up seeing The Witch, but this movie reminded me a lot of The Conjuring series, because I do believe you'll experience it differently based upon how you view religion and how religious you are, because people still do believe that.
How do you mean?
In that I think a lot of modern people, and this could be my own secular viewpoint, would look and think that it's horrible that they think this baby's burned in hell because of original sin and never getting baptized, etc. Whereas the very devout would just accept that as fact, or perhaps go to the more modern version where I think they say babies stay in limbo or what have you. But
well, in my experience, you can be very devout and still have very differing views of these kinds of issues. In the end, religion feels very personal.
Not to the devout, not to the dogmatic.
Even the dogmatic, when you get them alone and get them start talking, you see the cracks in there. It's very hard to find uniformity because there's so many different ways to interpret text.
Until you talk to somebody who thought cavemen rode dinosaurs, you don't know devout.
I have no devout people. Question: elevated horror. Is there really a witch? Is this all metaphor? Is this all a teenage girl imagining a supernatural cause for why the baby disappeared under her watch?
See, you talk about elevated horror being more psychological. I almost see it as the opposite, where it's saying, no, these supernatural things are real. I go back to, like, The Exorcist, which you take this secular mother and daughter, and at first they do all these tests on her head to, you know, why this stuff is going on, but nope, she's just really possessed by a demon. And I look at, like, Hereditary, I guess maybe possible spoiler, it ends up being, like, everything crazy going on in that film is probably real, and the same with this one. I mean, to me, you show that witch chopping up the baby, and that's about 10 minutes in. My wife tapped out. She's like, I'm done, not watching baby murder. But you see that they make it a point to show this ritual, putting the entrails all over her body and waxing her broomstick with it so she could fly. And to me, it's just more interesting saying, yeah, this stuff is real. And how do you address that?
If you'd like to hear this whole episode, help support our show by backing the Now Playing Podcast Podbean crowdfunding campaign. Backers of $10 or more will get 20 exclusive movie reviews not available anywhere else, including reviews of The Untouchables, Enter the Dragon, Goodfellas, Beetlejuice, The Lego Batman Movie, Galaxy Quest, Hook, and more. Plus, a new bonus review is added every month. You can find details at nowplayingpatron.com.
Wilt thou not help thy father?
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
We are your judges, and not you ours.
I cannot be judged by false Christians.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
We must ask thee to be silent.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2018, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
This does not look like witchcraft.